mothers.
And others.
Somewhere in the music industry, between sex, drugs and rock and roll and the Wiggles, is the rest of us. Music Mothers and Others is an audio parents group about popular music, a chance to discuss how parenting fits or doesn't into music industry life. During the series, we'll talk to people from across the industry, artists, promoters, techs, broadcasters, writers, academics, teachers, anyone who has a gig in industry, whatever that means. The hosts are Liz, hi, and Shelley.
Hi.
And we are industry veterans, academics and parents, as well as members of the broader village.
And our guest today on Music Mothers and Others is a 2020 ARIA-nominated, multi-award-winning Australian pianist and composer who creates lyrical, ethereal work that explores the space between classical and jazz genres. Her work has taken her around the world and more recently into bedrooms and playrooms with her lullaby projects, where parenting and musicking have literally come together. Please welcome the beautifully diverse Nat Bosch.
Hi, so lovely to be here. Thanks for having me.
When you were growing up, what type of music was kind of fueling you to get you where you are? And I've always wanted to know, do classical musicians, people that end up as classical musicians, are they always classical fans, or did you have like a sneaky Kylie Minogue period, you know? Like, where are you? How does it happen?
I would love to ask my classical music peers what music they enjoy listening to, but I suspect that if you ask anybody from our generation, they would probably say, yes, they listen to, you know, the music that is connected to the genre they're making. But they also just really enjoyed listening to Triple J growing up, or they, you know, they've got all of Sufjan Stevens' records on vinyl or something, you know, because it's these genres are all just a big melting pot now. Yeah, and for me, you know, that was my experience. I'm sort of playing catch up now with my classical music listening, and you know, probably the previous 10 years was my jazz music listening. But growing up, it was yeah, I loved listening to Something for Kate and Radiohead and all of those artists. I used to feel really guilty about that. Like, oh, I wish I, you know, I should have been listening to Avo Pärt or something. But it's fine. I think it all comes out in new music in a different way. And it's really interesting if you listen to interviews with someone like Richard Tognetti, who's the musical director of, the artistic director of the ACO. And, you know, he's going to gigs, you know, singing like the Polish Club, I think it is, or collaborating with singer-songwriters and stuff all the time. And I'm pretty certain that Richard Tognetti is not listening to classical music all day, every day. But in a way, it's just informed his artistic practice in a really amazing way, because he's able to contribute to classical music in a really broad, with a broader nuanced perspective. Yeah, I'm much more at peace now with the fact that I'm just as likely to play Steely Dan to my 2-year-old than I am to. This morning we listened to a Schumann string quartet over breakfast. So yeah, there's a little bit of that, but I'll also just as likely listen to Elbow or Bombay Bicycle Club or something. And I love that. It's great.
Beautiful. You have avoided Kylie Minogue. You've not gone full pop trash. That's okay. I'm all right with that.
I think there's a little bit of pop trash going on. I'm suppressing it.
No, that's okay. You've got a brand. You've got a brand you've got to protect. I do understand. A handsome face, Holly.
I had a handsome face in high school.
I think they're quite adorable, though. I reckon that's quite understandable, I think.
Yeah, and I had Savage Garden on cassette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they were very global, weren't they? I mean, you couldn't escape them. They're playing in all the shopping centres you're wandering through as a child anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes artists have an approach where they're just like, the music is an incredible wealth of diversity and different sounds and different instrumentations and genres and voices and timbres and all these things. Kid, I just want you to experience it all. And then there's other people who say, look, this is terrible music. I do not want you to listen to 1990s techno. You're not touching that stuff. Stay away from Ace of Base, or, you know, you're not listening to Barbie Girl. Do you have that kind of curation in your family home where you're just sort of selectively nudging your boy over towards some kind of music and blocking out others?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Ace of Base, because literally last week I played my son A's of Base. So I think it's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B, because I'm actually trying to expose Will to heaps of artists and heaps of different genres, more so than I would personally listen to. And we have a little playlist going on Spotify called Will Tunes. And on it, anything that he likes the sound of goes on that list. And, you know, we make quite a point of, you know, playing some Paul Simon or Dire Straits or something where it's, you know, it's not something I'm going to put on. I feel like it's kind of important for him to understand sort of the culture, like the musical culture that's come before us. And yes, in a way, it's avoiding a bit of trash, particularly, you know, asking for him to put on, you know, the Frozen soundtrack over and over again. So it's sort of trying to just show him that there's heaps of lovely music out there. And, you know, he sings like 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, Paul Simon song. Just he can sing it word for word over and over. And I'm so proud about that, because he does also know the words to Let It Go. I'm just trying to create a sort of rich musical world around him, which is probably what most musician parents would probably want to create for their kids, I reckon. My husband's a musician as well. So, yeah, it would be really weird, I think, if we weren't like, this is Elton John. He's really important. You should listen to him.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with doing that to your children. That's exactly what I do. I'm very sorry. And then you get rebellion, like my daughter, who she can feel that I want her to like something, will just, no.
So. I'm getting that at the moment with the new Trolls movie, the Trolls 2 movie, and I personally don't care for Trolls at all, but I do like the fact that if you haven't seen it yet, it's a musical mashup of all these sort of different hits, and it's a bit like the Hot Tub Time Machine that we had, Alex earlier in the series, where it's just little snippets of choruses from all these different songs, and so my daughter will be like, oh, Trolls, they wanna have fun, and I'm like, no, let's put on the original Cyndi Lauper version from 1980, six. We're going to listen to that on the vinyl, and you can look at the big cover and see her in that awesome dress. We'll talk about how Cyndi is actually the person who sang this song, not the Trolls.
Trolls is like a sort of gateway drug to listening to proper pop music or something.
There's our quote now. We're done. Thank you, Nat. That's beautiful. There's something that you would recommend to the people in charge about how you'd best make it a better family space. And it could just be for workers who are parents, or it could be to invite kids in, like your son somewhere in between. What is there anything you'd recommend?
Mm. Well, I guess there's two things. One would be just the idea of the matinee. But, like, you know, in other genres in other art forms, the matinee is a really important part of presenting your work. And maybe you only, you know, maybe one concert of six is during the day, but it's there. And it means that, you know, people who have to travel far, or people who are elderly or young families, or anyone can come and enjoy the art that you've created that's also on in the evenings for normal adults or whatever. And yeah, I feel like music could do a lot with that. I mean, maybe a little bit of it's to do with licensing in venues and stuff, particularly perhaps in Sydney.
Mm.
But yeah, because I've done some daytime concerts with my Lullaby Project. I've actually done concerts where I do a show in the afternoon and then sometimes a show in the evening, and it's like, have a break, go and have dinner, come back, play the music again. But it's not actually too hard to pull off. But that would make it hugely inclusive. And it's also great for parents that are musicians. You know, finding babysitting and stuff in the evening can be really difficult. And, you know, someone, Anna Cordell, who's a mother and an amazing singer-songwriter down here, she recently posted on Facebook about how, you know, there should just be some grants for mothers. and I thought about that too, because, I've recently been applying for a grant which has sort of access costs you can add on top. So to support, you know, artists that have a disability, or for audiences who might have a disability, you know, on top of the grant, they'll give you a little bit of extra funding to make it accessible and inclusive. And I thought, wouldn't that be great if you were an artist and you were a single mother, and you could just ask for a little bit of extra funding for something like childcare to happen in the evenings, because it's, you can't drop them off at, you know, the kinder at 9 o'clock at night. But I feel like that's a huge barrier for mothers in particular, but all parents who work in the music industry, especially if there's two musicians in the household, like my husband and I. You know, you have to have grandparents that live nearby. Otherwise, I think you just have to play tag team, and you can never do a gig on the same night.
And you can never do a gig together.
Yeah, exactly. We did some gigs together when my son was quite young. We were both playing for Circus Oz at the time. And, yeah, it's good for, like, one or two nights, but you can't do it consistently.
Mm.
So, yeah, that would make a huge difference. And also because, like, the income you get from gigs is so minimal, particularly in jazz, you know, original rock pop scene in Melbourne. You know, they're often door deal arrangements and stuff. So if you just paid a babysitter to look after your kid from 8 p.m. till midnight...
You're breaking even.
All of your income, yeah. So if there's any way of just providing a buffer to encourage parents to keep creating during that time with young children, it would be amazing. And music would be all the richer for it, I reckon.
Makes a good point too when you say the matinee, because it's a business model that's there.
Yeah, yeah.
And as we know, I don't know about you, but if you ever try and book a musical or something, the matinees always sell out first.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, 'cause Nana's organised. And the only person who's more organised than Nana is Mum.
Yes, exactly. So. I know, it's so funny. And you think about some of those venues where you've got the band room that's attached to the pub, and, you know, the pub is heaving on a Saturday at 2 p.m. and everyone's, you know, watching the AFL game or, you know, having beers and a Palmer for lunch. And it's like, just have the band room open, and yeah, maybe you don't serve alcohol over that side of the venue. That's fine. But, you know, the staffing is there. It's all just, yeah, it's just up and running. It would be so easy. Yeah, all you need to do is organise some pram parking and not serve beers. It's not hard. Know festivals like the Lost Lands Festival, which is just, I went there, I was like, oh gosh, this is amazing. And my husband was playing drums in the Teeny Tiny Stevies at the time, and so they, it was like the first Lost Lands, I think, and they were playing, and so I was like, yay, I'm gonna come and watch. And then I was like, wait, this is just the best model ever.
I'm showing you my calendar now, which is Zoom, yep, which says Lost Land Festivals Friday this week. Yes. And it's cancelled, of course, so it's meant to be on this Friday.
Yes, I know. We went to the last one, and it was it was just so special. It was teeming with rain, but
we were there too.
Yeah. But just to be able to experience live music like that with your kid, it's so nice to watch them have that experience. That was, for me, was the joy. You know, Sampa the Great just being an absolute queen. It's a really important contribution to Australian music and Australian culture. And there's my son, and he's 2 and a half, and he's watching it. And I was just so special, you know, more of that, heaps more of that. Not just one weekend in November, but just all the time.
Yeah, it's a great idea, isn't it? Even big bands like UMI did at the Annandale when I was very pregnant, they were doing afternoon gigs as well as nighttime gigs. And there was just this collective weeping of parents. We say young parents. I'm going to count myself as a young parent who's got young kids, yep, right? Even though I'm not that young. But you could just feel people go, oh, thank God, I get to go home, but I still get to be a grown-up. It's so amazing, you know?
Yeah, and I always say to my lullaby audiences at the start, this is just like a normal classical music concert, in the sense that I'm going to play for 45 minutes at the piano. But the other part of it that's different is that you're here with your kids, and they're very welcome to move around the space. You know, you can breastfeed, they can hold a rattle, or, you know, just crawl around. The one thing they can't do is touch the piano. That's the only thing that they can't do. And it's amazing how, if you trust people with that, that they're very able to kind of step up and help the baby have a nice experience, but also be sensitive to other audience members and all that sort of stuff.
You must be also giving them permission to just be themselves, and they can probably just relax and know that it's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
If there's a screaming baby, you can just do whatever you need to do to to get that under control.
Yeah, every once in a while you see, I've stopped having glasses of water next to the piano because I used to get these little babies who just appear out of nowhere just reaching
for the glass. Yes, I know that hand.
And every once in a while someone is sort of going out into the foyer with their cranky baby or whatever. That's all part of it. But it's just kind of just creating just a relaxed space where you can just be there. And even if you only really get to enjoy 15 minutes, you know, you went out and you had that experience with your baby and that's great. It's a bit like going to the playground and you just roll the dice, whether it's going to be a good day or a bad day.
Very true.
When you're writing lullabies, and we'll talk about the rest of your music too, but when you're writing lullabies, what frame of mind do you have to be in? Like, do you have to be writing at night? I know this is going to sound weird, but do you have to be sleepy? Like, how do you get yourself into the right frame of mind to write music that's going to put somebody else to sleep?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think most of my music, even the stuff I made before the Lullaby Project, probably would do a pretty decent job sending people to sleep. I've always written quite soothing music. So therefore, I think really any time of day will do to get that sort of aesthetic happening in my music. The main difference with the lullabies is that I'm often just thinking about the experience of being a parent and thinking about my son. So my lullaby album, most of the pieces were written inspired by his particular stage of development that he was at the time. There was some where I actually was holding him in my left arm and then composing at the piano with my right hand. Yeah, and so now, even if I'm writing a lullaby commission for another family or writing a song that isn't even strictly a lullaby for my next album, I guess I'm still drawing upon that sort of really beautiful, vulnerable time as a young mum. Hi, I'm Nat Bartsch and you're listening to Music, Mothers and Others. When I write my lullabies, I'm thinking about some of the research that I encountered that music therapists have done about how to help babies relax. And so there's some research papers that have suggested parameters like playing with a tempo similar to a mother's heartbeat, or using a lot of repetition or simple melodies, simple harmonies. And so when I'm writing, I guess in a way, I'm sort of sitting at the piano going, oh, I could do that really cool, complicated chord or complicated melody. And then I go, hold on a second, what will the babies want to hear? And then I sort of try and find the middle ground where it's not strictly, you know, an album that only babies will want to hear, because the parents will just go crazy listening to it. I'm sort of a classical composer now, and people will commission me to write, you know, proper chamber music works for piano and string quartet or something. But with the lullabies, most of the time it's being commissioned by a young family to write just a simple little melody and lyrics for them to sing to their baby. And so I'll meet them via Zoom and find out everything about their family that's unique and any sort of values that they want to instill in the baby as they grow up. And then I go away and just write a little tune and then send it as a little MP3. So they can learn how to sing it. And then I also hand notate the melody into a manuscript so they can get it framed if they want to. And yeah, it's really lovely. And it's been a really excellent business choice, considering we've gone into a pandemic and now I'm not doing any gigs anywhere.
You've mentioned for the 2018 album Forever and No Time at All that you were composing literally with your son in your arms, playing the piano with one hand. But now that he is older, how does composing work in your house when you've got an active little person around? We sometimes ask our guests if they lean into the situation and just go, look, this is it. I can't, there's nothing I can do to change this. I'm just going to work with it. Or are you trying to aim for that separation of work and life, because that's how the majority, I'm assuming, the majority of your life as a composer has been, just working quietly with no children going, can I have a Vegemite sandwich, please?
Yeah, yeah, coming in and asking for Teeny Tiny Stevie songs on the piano instead. I tend to work best in isolation. Sorry, that's a bit of a pun these days. But, I need quiet time at the piano. But the thing that's really struck me about becoming a parent is just how productive you become. So when Will's at childcare, I just work furiously for 8 hours. whereas before he was born, it might have been just sort of endless cups of tea and sort of trying to deliberate about what to write in the seventh bar. And now it's like, I've got to get this draft done by the end of the day. So I think in a way it's just made me very productive. And I'm also just quite at peace with the fact that there may be 3 or 4 days in a row where I can't really get back to the piano and compose. Every once in a while I'll sort of pick up a voice memo on my phone and, you know, check something that I might have composed on a Tuesday. And that time away from the piano actually really helps to figure out whether you're happy with a composition. I think, yeah, it's funny. I think becoming a parent has sort of helped me have a healthier relationship with being a creative professional, because there's a lot more boundaries and you can't just do it anytime you want, long into the night or every day. I get messages from people where they tell me that they delivered their baby to this music, or they play it every day and they're dealing with the grief of losing a parent, or it's just really overwhelming. Sometimes I'm moved to tears by the responses I get from people. It just feels like such an honour to have something of value to contribute to people in those moments. And some of it's been really, really full on. Like, I did a lullaby concert in Brunswick last year, and my sister came with her newborn daughter, who would have been about 6 weeks old. And so Billy was there. And then a friend of mine came with his mother and also their kids. So it was sort of like a grandparent experience with the children watching my lullabies. And she was really unwell with cancer, and it was quite a late stage, and it was such an effort for her to come. I was so honored that she had made the effort. It took a really long time to get her even out of the car and into the venue and then back out, and I gave her a CD on the way out and said, thank you so much for making this effort. And she actually passed away about 7 days later, and they played my album like every day in those final hours, and I just stopped crying just thinking about it, you know. And the idea that I did a concert and there was somebody there who was their very first concert and somebody's very last concert at the same time, it's just so special. Yeah. The next album I'm making is called Hope, and it's I guess a meditation on these times. It was started out writing during the bushfires and then finished writing the album during the pandemic. And yeah, I think in a way I do feel like that is, you know, writing soothing, hopeful music is kind of my shtick now. And I'm quite happy to do that. I think everybody's original music has a purpose. And, you know, I listen to all sorts of music that makes me feel happy or sad or, you know, relieved, that maybe wasn't necessarily specifically thinking about that. But I'm very happy to just work with that model for a while, because especially at the moment, we're just living in history. We're going to study this period in history for, you know, centuries. You know, I'm very happy to step up there and do what I can to help people through this difficult time. That's not something I've even had to sort of deliberate about. I'm just 100% on board. That sounds like a good use of my time.
What are the kids and you listening to?
The new Teeny Tiny Stevie's album, which I was lucky to play keyboards on, and my son asks for it all the time. And sometimes he goes, oh, is this you? Is this you playing keyboards? I'll be like, no, that's the old album. That's Sibylla playing keyboards or Beth playing keyboards. But my husband played drums on that. And then he goes, whoa. So, yeah. And they're an absolute perfect model for what you can do crossing genres, you know, and moving, doing, just keeping your thing, retaining your thing and just tweaking it just that tiny little bit.
And you mentioned some Schubert this morning too, did you?
Schumann.
Schumann, I'm sorry. There was a bit of classical happening too.
There was. Yeah, yeah. And then he was like, after about halfway through the first movement, he was like, can we put on the teeny tiny Stevies? And I was like, when this song finishes.
How wonderful, Nat. What an absolute joy. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Nat.
No worries.
Music, Mothers and Others is a show written and produced by Liz Dufresne and Shelley Brunt. We're broadcast on Sydney's 2SER on 107.3 FM and we are also a podcast. Find our episodes on all your usual services such as Apple and Spotify or our website, musicmothersandothers.com. We'd love you to leave a review. It would make it easier for other people to find us. Feel like getting in touch? Want to know who our next guests are? Visit us on Facebook and Instagram and leave us a message. See you next time.